It is the season of festive galactic war for Tacticus. Since its release in 2022, Snowprint Studios has kept introducing fresh content, exciting features, new game modes, and challenging events. You likely already know that Tacticus is the definitive mobile game experience for Warhammer 40,000 with its quick turn-based PvE and PvP battles. And for 2024's Grotmas, several new champions are being released this month. For the Tyranids, the Parasite of Mortrex, and the Blood Angels can unlock Nicodemus, a sanguinary priest. Then, during the Christmas special events, the Orcs will see the Red Gobbo unleashing his festive revolution, only available to play during this limited time event. The festive Grot will be throwing his seasonal glee in true Orc fashion, the explosive variety. My very first sponsorship with Tacticus came during the Christmas season, and as I said then, this is the perfect time to try out Tacticus. We all will have downtime during the Xmas week while we sleep off the huge food binge, often we're away from home. So you can try out Tacticus today, it's free, so download, take command, and deliver the cheer of the Red Gobbo starting December 25th. Click the link below this video or use the QR code on the screen. Tacticus have also provided me with a gift code for you to gain some in-game perks for new and existing players. So use code LT09XMAS and come join the ever-growing community of Tacticus today. Following on from a return to Vigilus, I'm catching up with some series here on the channel that I've left unattended, covered with an oily tarpaulin and whose engines I'm praying now are going to cold start. My past self was shocked at a 6-month interval between episodes 3 and 4 of this series, while they would be all the more shocked at the 3-year interval between that episode and today. So thankfully, we will finally return to explore more of the truly insane weaponry of the 41st millennium. Humanity of the Imperium has steadily descended into an era unlike any that came before. It retains its strength, it holds some hope to regain and hold its territory, yet the deluge of enemies that stand before the Empire of the Imperium remains unrelenting, and the nature of the Xenos horrors that threaten it condemn them to nothing other than total extermination. All of this is nothing new to the Imperium of Mankind, of course, an empire of 10,000 years that has seen it dragged up from the dirt of the Age of Strife, painfully resurrected into a civilization that is driven by endless war and rage-fueled survival. The brutal reality of galactic life in M41 has necessitated some of the most bizarre and appalling weapon creations. Not just by humanity, but by those who seek themselves galactic dominion and survival by any means necessary. Some, such as the Necron, have existed for many millions of years, and the depth of their technology and arsenal are only beginning now to be seen. Periodically, they bring forth a creation that is truly world-ending, and something designed for a war of an entirely different age and scale, the era known as the War in Heaven. By stark contrast, and somehow bizarrely equally dangerous, you have the Xenos known as the Orcs, who on the one hand can pilot a moon-sized weapon which nearly destroys humanity, yet also are satisfied by just strapping an explosive to another object and throwing it roughly in the direction of an enemy. Then lastly, of course, you have the Imperium itself, who continue to wield a vast array and sliding scale of technology. The Mechanicus remain able to deploy some of the most advanced and terrifying field weaponry ever seen, some capable of damaging planetary bodies themselves. For the ordinary guardsman, though, a battery-powered laser rifle must suffice. As always in this series, I'll take an opportunity to say how much I continue to appreciate all of your support here on the channel. Every like and comment on videos matters, and it matters to me, and it matters to the channel. So if you're an early viewer, a repeat viewer, not to mention those using the video as a sleeping aid, it all helps support the channel because every interaction matters. And the better a video does, the more I will be able to make. So let's now once again talk about weapons. If your favoured selection of insane weaponry or planetary crushing device is not featured in this episode, please tell me your own suggestions for most insane weapons down below in the comments. It may not even be a weapon, as we've seen before. Ideologies or concepts also count. So tell me what you want to see below and why. But for now, we continue on our journey to the insane, outlandish tools of destruction in the 41st millennium. Firstly, we begin with the terrors of the Flesh Forge, the Chaos Obliterators, who represent one of the most twisted and terrifying manifestations of the Chaos Astartes. Warriors who have succumbed to the dark blessings of the ruinous powers and become living engines of destruction. They're far more than just corrupted space marines. They're a horrifying fusion of flesh, machine, and warp energy that are an offence to the natural order of all things, a literal embodiment of the dark will of the gods. Obliterators are feared across the galaxy, even among their own. Physically, they form a living mobile weapons platform, carrying enough firepower to wreak a terrible cost to any enemy. To humanize, they are monstrous horrors which define the twisted nightmare reality of the warp itself, their forms defying all sanity and reason. Their existence, an affront to everything the Emperor and Loyalists hold sacred. The genesis of the Chaos Obliterators is rooted in a strange affliction known as the Obliterator Virus. This techno-organic infection is believed to have been propagated by exposure to the raw energies of the warp itself, but very likely also due to the influence of the Dark Mechanicum who reside there. The virus transforms those it infects into grotesque amalgamations of organic matter and machinery. Whether it's truly a virus in the conventional understanding is anybody's guess, but its observable consequences are plain to see. Initially, this virus preyed upon tech marines and warp smiths, or indeed any technologically minded members of the traitor legions, for they were the most susceptible to the allure of machine spirits and forbidden techno-heretical rituals. But later, the infection would spread among the Chaos Astartes themselves, particularly those who sought forbidden knowledge and power from the warp, which of course was many of them. The transformation itself is irreversible. It traps them in an infected state of eternal fusion with their weapons and armory. Their limbs do not contain any permanent weapon fixtures. Instead, they're able to morph into a varying array of guns, flamers, missile launchers, and other weapons of war. These will bizarrely shift and reshape in the blink of an eye to unleash whatever form of destruction a situation may need. The transformation itself to an obliterator also will leave them consumed with an insatiable need to destroy. Their minds are splintered by the constant warping of their forms, and so while many traitor Astartes embrace transformation as a gift from the gods, others lose themselves wholly, both physically and mentally, and in the case of the obliterators, becoming little more than sentient weapons themselves. For Chaos Marines, though, the reality of seeing such corruption can still, surprisingly, be very disturbing. Remembering that although 10,000 years have passed in the material realm, for those trapped in the warp, very little time can appear to have passed since the end of the heresy. Some traitor marines may only feel a few centuries or even 1,000 years have passed. What that means is many will still clearly remember how they were among those Legiones Astartes during the Crusade and the heresy, created as paragons of genetic perfection and martial supremacy. They were noble, disciplined, bound by duty to the Emperor. In rejecting their oaths and embracing the ruinous powers and promises of the Dark Gods, many were driven also into this reality with very little understanding of what it would ultimately mean. Many were just following Horus or their commanders. Over the millennia, the descent into chaos has fundamentally changed the physical and psychological nature of those in the traitor legions. For some, this has led to far more dramatic changes than among others. The warp's influence seeps deeper into their beings, and the Chaos Marines have become increasingly unrecognizable to loyalist counterparts. Many, especially those who remain among the so-called undivided worshippers of Chaos, feature fairly muted twisting of their forms. But for those such as the Plague Marines or the Chaos Obliterators, they represent the transformations of Chaos in its most extreme form. They're no longer just warriors, but living reflections of the mutating and corrupting powers of the warp, which unleashes strength and devastation, but at the cost of identity. This is true of all who fell to Chaos, that loss of identity, but it takes very different forms. Where once the Iron Warriors sought perfection in their siegecraft, they now revel in unrelenting destruction. The Emperor's children once pursued excellence and artistry, and whilst that is still true, they are now slaves to excess. They're consumed by the madness of Slaanesh. In the case of the Obliterators, they're no longer anything you would even call an individual. They're simply tools of destruction. They're devoid of any coherent reasoning or restraint, which is itself a greater reflection of what has taken place among the traitor Astartes, no matter their specific legion. For all have become slaves to darkness, extensions of the warp and its incomprehensible will. This is one of the ultimate tragedies of those who fell to Chaos during the Heresy. This was their great collective delusion and ignorance. Chaos Space Marines were originally those proud, sharp, intelligent warriors who consciously chose to serve the gods, believing that it would empower them somehow and allow them to form a new order in the galaxy. While some fight as much now against retaining their own autonomy as much as they do the Imperium, some have become vessels for the warp itself, their fates entirely dictated, puppeted by the twisted energies therein. It is a cautionary tale to any who would tread the path of Chaos, and many Chaos Space Marines pursued power without understanding really the consequences of their devotion, none perhaps more vividly than the Thousand Suns. But it's true of any who delve too deeply into forbidden technologies and expose themselves to the mutating energies of the warp or performing unspeakable rituals. The consequences of such, usually that said individual becomes some twisted monstrosity bearing little resemblance to whatever they were originally. Obliterators, though, are, like so many traitors, able to cling on to still a thread of their sentience, which may be more or less horrific depending on how you really want to see that, because their minds exist to be forever torn between flesh and metal, chaos and destruction. Yet they're not entirely unenviable. To some Chaos Marines, the Obliterators represent the ultimate potential of Chaos, a fusion of the physical and warp that is near to unstoppable on the battlefield. For whilst there is tragedy and sadness sometimes among the Chaos Marines who will see what they have become or try to resist the very worst predations of Chaos and the warp itself, there are those who will throw themselves willingly at the behest of the Dark Gods to become whatever vessel they see fit. Some see their loss of identity as very much the price required to be devoted to Chaos, but one that some would very willingly pay. Because to become an Obliterator is to lose yourself entirely in exchange for unrelenting destructive power. Some might even enjoy becoming such a vessel, to exist as a twisted living metaphor for the Chaos Marines and Gods collectively. I think undoubtedly some would do so in a state of dark comedic despair. Because of all the horror they have endured, the reality they must exist in, they essentially become despondent and just revel in the comedic bleak horror of their own reality. Within the hierarchy of the Chaos Astartes then, Obliterators are not formally organized like typical warbands or squads. They appear sporadically. They are unpredictable, not dissimilarly to demons in some respects. Many Chaos Lords will view them with a very cautious eye too, because they can be a very double-edged sword. Their power cannot be denied, but it also cannot really be controlled. Their loyalty unstable at best. Nonetheless, they remain so terrifyingly powerful and effective that few Chaos Lords could deny wishing to have them at their side in a battle. Many will bargain, threaten, or offer obscene tributes to gain their aid. Some Chaos Astartes warbands who understand the process of empowering and using the intricacies of the warp, such as the Word Bearers, may form groups whose sole purpose is to raise and bring to the field fringe weapons of power, such as demons, engines of chaos, or obliterators. They're not often seen, but they do sometimes exist, so-called obliterator cults. Although this is a little bit of an inaccurate term, because these are simply obliterators who share a common master, or just those who are driven together by their own urges, rather than any semblance of military discipline. Even when they do form together in small groups, they are rarely cohesive and continue to act on whatever stimulus is directed toward them. The result, though, of engaging an obliterator is truly terrifying. As heavy units, their shifting weaponry allows them to adapt to virtually any threat. They can wield rotary cannons, plasma, las cannon, close-range annihilations with flame blade, chain and melter. They can reshape any of these in an instant to meet whatever target they are driven toward. But perhaps most horrifying of all is the fact that obliterators may be deployed by teleporting directly into enemy formations, with obvious unwelcome consequences. Having Chaos Terminators teleport in on your position would be bad enough, but an obliterator, if you can possibly imagine, is a monstrosity sized somewhere between a Terminator and a Dreadnought. Accompanied by a searing flash of teleportation light and screaming corrupted arcane machinery, they emerge into sometimes well-established defended positions enough to then shatter enemy morale. Immediately they'll unleash a torrent of firepower ripping through armor and infantry alike. For all but the most elite of enemies, this is going to be an incredibly difficult challenge to survive, let alone overcome. Bolter and lasgun rounds alike will be absorbed or shatter harmlessly against their fleshy, plated hides. They can even shrug off as much as a las cannon blast. Flame weapons fail to really adhere to their form, and the usually irresistible conflagration of melter weapons are still only partially effective. In many respects, obliterators are one of the most true form of traitor Astartes, because their weaponry does not even appear to be physical in the standard sense. Instead, it seems to manifest from their own flesh, as though their bodies have become conduits for the warp power itself. Similarly to Noise Marines, they are as much body horror as they are devastating war machine. They remind very much of something akin to Cronenberg creations from the likes of Videodrome. Guardsmen who survive encounters with obliterators can often be heard to describe seeing their limbs split open into snarling muzzles. Their cabling and gun barrels sprout like tumours from their flesh. Even the very act of firing the weapon itself is accompanied by hideous sounds, grinding metal against bubbling flesh, unholy screaming roars that suggest some cruel sentience within the weapons. Thus, obliterators are one of the most insane weapon creations of Chaos. To the Imperium, they are the stuff of literal nightmares, monsters who defy the laws of physics, biology, and reason. Even among the already blasphemous ranks of the Chaos Astartes, obliterators are regarded as obscene aberrations. Among the Militarum, facing an obliterator is akin to staring into the maw of death itself. They would witness the unnatural melding of gunmetal and muscle, weapons which seem to grow and writhe as if though alive. Even Space Marines, who are conditioned to face the horrors of the galaxy without fear, regard obliterators with wariness and disgust. For to face an obliterator is not merely to face an Astartes, a warrior, but a walking symbol of the most terrifying aspects of Chaos itself, unending corruption. And among the Astartes, it is perhaps this which stings the most. Because for all their horror, the obliterators are a reflection of the Imperium's own failures. It is an undeniable truth that below their grotesque exteriors survive the remnants of once great warriors who believe themselves cast aside, betrayed, or just driven to desperation. For those who can understand this, there is something altogether more disturbing about the forms of an obliterator. Because unlike the traitors who have clung to whatever shreds of humanity they have deludedly allowed themselves to hold on to, obliterators, like some other Chaos forms, represent those who have become completely lost, moulded by the eternal tides of the warp, a living weapon which exists only to destroy, the ultimate expression of the descent into madness, a reflection of the Chaos Marines' growing reliance on the warp and their increasing distance from what they once were, which for the traitors of Chaos Undivided is perhaps more disturbing and troubling than it could ever be for Loyalists, who view such monstrosities with simple fear and loathing. For the Chaos Astartes, there is a more fundamentally troubling unease to seeing obliterators come to the battlefield, for within, they see the insane distortion of their selves and what one day they could ultimately become. And then we move on to the Tank Busters, one of my all-time favourite things in 40k. And why? Well, because they are the comically paradoxical embodiment of all things orc, that being a weapon which is simultaneously crude yet ingenious, idiotic yet terrifyingly effective. Because orcs enjoy having a good wreckfest just as much as they do smashing umi skulls, be that a humble rhino or the mightiest of titans. Notable that one time they were able to bring down a titan by literally crashing one of their speediest racers into it and slaughtering the unaware princeps crew, so this isn't something that cannot happen. And it is the unassuming nature of orcs which leads to them being such an immense danger. Often they're so chaotic and comical that nobody could really believe they would ever be a threat worth worrying about. But it is this underestimation which causes many of the biggest problems in the Imperium. So while their methods may seem laughable, anybody who has actually fought the Orc menace knows never to underestimate them. Even if they're catapulting squigs of various design in your direction, especially the ones with teeth in every orifice. Orc weapons range from the "how the hell does that even work" through to the "that's so crazy it literally shouldn't work" categories. Well, the most simple of all, it's loud and has big dacker. As for the weaponry of choice for tank busters, they lie somewhere in the middle of this. For they possess an undeniable brilliance in terms of their single-minded pursuit to inflict mechanized carnage, paired with standard orc comedic angles, which is fair enough when fighting in a galaxy of the Imperium, Necron and other factions who all rely on their oversized armoured assets and who can field some of the most advanced technology ever seen. The orc solution to counter this is as simple as you could possibly imagine. From a logical standpoint, much of what tank busters do borders on absurd, strapping together crude explosives and launching their often barely functional rocket launchers, sometimes along with themselves, pretty rough and recklessly towards heavily armoured targets. They've got anti-tank grenades, their famed tank buster bombs are also absurd in design, massive, unwieldy devices that look like they've been bolted together by a particularly eccentric mech. But the true madness of the orc tank buster is reserved for the most orc of orc things, tank hammers. These tank, or sometimes called rocket hammers, are the delivery system of choice for the shortest term thinking orc weapon. They're crafted from the most choice scrap metal and salvage parts, attached to explosives and then propelled not necessarily by thrust, but simply by themselves swinging it at an enemy vehicle. And this obviously necessitates being at pretty close range to your target. So much so that most often they're more likely to explode in the user's face and reflect off of the armour than actually harming the target. So essentially, the orcs really just blow themselves up by smashing explosives into enemy armour. But, you know, it's a good laugh, isn't it? So the tactics of tank buster orcs are very admirable. Cover, stealth, opportunity. These are dirty words to a tank buster. Because their tactic of choice is pretty easy to follow. 1. Sea tank. 2. Charge tank. And 3. Smash tank. I always like to imagine one older orc explaining this process to other orcs and they're all nodding along very enthusiastically as if this was some genius stroke that nobody else had thought about, while one among their number is not maybe 100% clear on the process, but they don't want to look like the odd one out. But after all, what sane being would just charge straight towards a Baneblade with nothing more than an oversized explosive strapped to a pipe to deal with it, along with maybe some blind optimism? Well, an orc tankbuster would, but therein lies the true cunningness and brutal brilliance of the tank busters. Because nobody expects anyone to charge straight toward a Baneblade with nothing more than an oversized explosive strapped to a pipe. This might all be laughably dismissive for the apparent stupidity of it, were it not for the fact that orc tankbusters are in fact frustratingly effective. their rocket launchers, while crewed, pack enough explosive punch to rip through the thick armour of even the most formidable Imperial vehicles and Xenos tanks. The aforementioned tank buster bombs, though unwieldy, are devastatingly powerful also, capable of disabling engines, ripping off treads, or just blowing apart gun turrets. And the terrifying madness of an orc blowing a huge hole in the side of your tank by swinging basically an explosive sledgehammer into it is surely the greatest of all. But amid all this madness, it is the tank buster's unpredictability which makes them so difficult to counter, because they can appear from anywhere and will not stop until they're either put down or throwing anything explosive to hand in your direction. They're also very innovative in typical orky fashion regarding their approach to tank destruction. They've been known to ride squigs laden with explosives, catapult bombs using ramshackle contraptions, or attach themselves to vehicles like barnacles to deliver their payloads at point-blank range. So to the Imperium and others, this all seems completely insane. But their self-destructive simplicity is their strength, because tank busters don't worry about technical precision. They just make things go boom, by any means necessary. Somewhat comparable, I think, to the soldiers of Krieg, their approaches seem to have a considerable psychological impact, especially against humans. Few things are as terrifying to an armoured crew as a mob of crazed greenskins swarming toward them armed to the teeth and howling for their destruction, probably blowing themselves up accidentally on the way over as well. But it is this tank hammer that is perhaps the greatest weapons for me, maybe in 40k, because you can well imagine a fired up orc tank buster leaping from a rock ledge onto a bane blade below, all while screaming to his mates, "Witness me!" Then lastly, it may seem near impossible that the approach of a rambling orc mob could ever prove to be effective against tightly drilled, tactically deployed Imperial troops that are just sending out thousands of rounds of ammunition in all directions. How on earth could their sheer stupidity ever be effective against this? How can the orcs survive? Is it blind luck? Their instinctive gut drive for improvisation? What is it? Is it the sheer power of Gork and Mork? Well, the answer is probably all of the above. Because, as with so many things orc, tank busters prove time and again that even the most chaotic strategies, simplistic chaotic strategies at that, can yield devastating results. Which is very confusing and frustrating to those in the Imperium. Because by any rational view, orcs just running towards vehicles should be easily dealt with by the best of the Imperium. But this, in fact, is the entire point. In fact, it's the larger point about orcs themselves. Because tank busters are a confirmation to the orcs that sheer brute force and enthusiasm is all you need to win. And that's actually a lot more important than you might think, because this highlights another insane weapon that we're going to discuss next, and that is the somewhat self-fulfilling prophecy of Orky Fings. Now, in this series, I usually try to vary the entries. In fact, I had another one lined up originally for this slot, but then I realised this is one which needed to be covered because it connects directly to what we just talked about. But I titled this entry Orky Fings because, quite honestly, that seemed as fitting as was necessary. It's one of the more adjacent weapon entries, as I've done before, similarly to the Spirit of the Imperium, but it is equally valid in my opinion, and for this reason. The insanity of this is due to both what it is capable of and how it remains ignorantly underexploited, which is a typical theme within 40k. The Imperium do this as well. Often they have what they seek right under their nose, but they're unable to plainly see this as they're so tunnel visioned on the process and the conflicts involved in locating whatever relic it is that they're trying to seek. Alternatively, they are genuinely so encumbered by their own dogmatic ignorance that this also causes them to be unable to detect whatever advanced knowledge they've been questing for. With the orcs, though, it is a little different, obviously, because their ignorance, it does encumber them, certainly, but more strangely, it also empowers them. It protects them from the clutches and the manipulations of chaos, for the most part. It makes them unlikely to form strained alliances, and even though orcs fight amongst themselves, as do the Imperium, when it comes down to it, they'll be more inclined to smash a pointy-eared or stupid Umi than they would do a Grot. Although the Grot would probably still get a good kick in afterwards just for the laughs. So, Lutin, get to the point. Okay, so the orc weapon here in question is their latent psychic nature. What does that mean? Well, it is this infamous red ones go faster adage. This is the general truth of the orcs, that if collectively they feel something is going to happen or is observably true, then it will be true, and they make that happen. It's very strange, and what's most interesting about this ability, as in the case of the orc tank busters, is that their blind self-belief is often sometimes close to this self-fulfilling prophecy, as I mentioned. Now, to be clear, that term is usually used in regard to something like a prediction or a vision that then causes something to happen that might not have been otherwise. In the case of the orcs, it's a little bit more literal, but it's close enough. Because just how orcs determine what they will empower is something I see commonly not being really fully understood when it comes to the orcs. I often see people making joking things about, oh, orcs can just imagine this to happen and then it will do. It doesn't really work like that. All orcs have some psychic ability, but unlike humans and the Eldari, it works a little differently because orcs don't draw power from the warp, thereby they don't risk those pitfalls. Cumulatively, they gather sort of psychic mass. What that means is that if you, say, had 10 orcs having a race, just because one of those orcs believed his red one would go faster, that might not really happen or be the case. Now, if you had 500 orcs and over half of them were all on Team Red, now your red racer might win, regardless if it were actually the fastest, because their collective belief would make the red one go faster. Alternatively, you might have had, say, a particularly talented mech who genuinely made a really fast racer for an orc. Then that orc driver decided he really likes red and it's going to make his racer go super speedy fast. So when the orc drives his truck racer and it does indeed go very fast, it's very likely that it's actually down to the skill of the mech. However, that is not important. Because what is important is that the orc driver is then going to tell everybody that red ones go faster. And then they all start painting their trucks red, regardless of how powerful the engines are. Then later, when they're having a huge wah, and there are thousands of orcs all racing toward an enemy bastion, all their vehicles painted red are all gonna go faster. And this is the amazing thing about the orcs. In the case then of the tank busters, it's very likely that some of their absurd weapons, like the tank hammer, originally were genuinely pretty stupid and ineffective, but maybe one of them had a particularly exciting, lucky, dramatic effect, like an orc swinging his rocket hammer and it hits a weak point, setting off a chain reaction. Maybe it destroys several other tanks from one hit, and any surviving orcs are gonna tell that story, and then other tank busters, when they're actually having a war, are all going to believe that that can happen, making it more likely to happen again. So then, bizarrely, you have this ineffective weapon becoming extremely dangerous. So this is really the insane thing when it comes to orcs. They can increase their abilities and effectiveness just by willing it to happen through sheer belief, which is in fact due to this latent group psychic connection. And the more orcs there are, the stronger this ability becomes, to the point at which if you had millions of orcs, then some really weird stuff could start to happen, which we have seen historically with the orcs. However, a caveat, as I said, that I think sometimes people forget or they get a little bit carried away with this idea, is that all of this does not mean that orcs will just think, oh, Titan goes boom, and then instantly bring down a warlord Titan without a shot being fired. It doesn't work that way, and as I said in the beginning, because of the orcs' own ignorance, it kind of encumbers them to not really understand what they actually have and the power they have going on. Like I said, the way I think of it is more of a self-fulfilling prophecy, in the sense of the orcs may observe or see a thing, this then enables that to happen more and more, and then you see orcs collectively willing a thing to happen by just believing it. But it tends to be more passive, like for example orcs being able to travel through the warp or exist within a space hulk. They'll form this bubble of protection and breathable air because they all collectively want or just believe this to be possible. and then so it is. But you couldn't do that with, say, just 10 orcs, or if it did happen, it would be at some very scaled down representation. Much harder and more implausible to, say, be in the middle of a battle. You got to get all the attention of the other orcs to all think the same thing about, say, a titan spontaneously exploding. However, what could be more feasible is that if they were all focusing on, say, fighting, actively fighting, bringing down a huge enemy, maybe collectively some random occurrence might then become more likely. Or what about just a huge orc walker construct, and it's known for having a big saw slasher that kills every time? All the orcs know that the big orc slasher kills every time, for they've seen it happen before. And because they've known that and believe that, they fulfill it for happening over and over again. So it kind of self-fulfills. There are so many permutations of this sort of process, and maybe an orc racer is very good at jumping his truck. So, in the midst of battle, he tries to jump it over an imperial wall so they can blow it open from the inside. All the orcs have seen them do this before, and so regardless of physics and chance, the orc jumps the wall to the confusion and horror of the imperial defenders. So this is the insanity of orky things, that you have no idea what's going to happen, and so even completely insane tactics like charging a tank with a rocket on a stick somehow becomes viable, if not surprisingly effective, which is a very dangerous and insanely powerful weapon. Then lastly, a long overdue entry. I remember long being captivated by Terminator Lightning Claws early in my 40k journey, along with the Cyclone missile launcher. But in many respects, they are one of the most fearsome weapons in the arsenal of the Adeptus Astartes. Both horrifying and brutally simplistic, these twin claw weapons are mounted upon armoured gauntlets of those granted the honour of being bestowed the wearer of tactical dreadnought armour, otherwise known as Terminator armour, bearing the sacred Crux Terminatus. Of course, lightning claws have been now seen worn by those such as assault marines. But in the more vague, limited age of the lore past, Terminators were the primary platform for lightning claws. How then do they function? Well, each lightning claw consists of a gauntlet-mounted array of already razor-sharp blades, but their true power is in the crackling, disruptive energy fields that dance across the blade's surface. Similarly to other powered blades, this then enables them to shear through ceramite, adamantium, and even other energy fields. As within the general category of power weapons, the field that surrounds them enhances their lethality. As they come into contact with any material, they disrupt the molecular bonds, ensuring that even the toughest of armor or most resilient Xenos hides cannot withstand their rending strikes, as they tear clean through matter that would otherwise shatter the raw blades. Most commonly, Terminator Lightning Claws are deployed as paired weapons. This allows their user to fight with devastating ferocity in close combat. However, their lack of a ranged weapon obviously is a disadvantage, hence the tactical armor aspect when it comes to a Terminator. But being slow and heavily armored, Terminators are best deployed by teleporting into closer range. Their armor then is easily able to dismiss all but the most heavy weaponry, something generally not seen in close quarters. A Terminator who's wearing lightning claws appearing inside an enemy fortress is going to be able to weather the storm of fire coming in their direction, and then as they close the gap, they will unleash a full slaughter. Like all Astartes who wear Terminator armor, although bulky, they are still expertly trained, and their black carapace augment enables them to sync perfectly with the suit. Thus, despite its bulk, a Terminator wielding lightning claws can move and slash with a fluid precision that is awe-inspiring to behold as they dismember and rend through multiple foes in a single motion. The blade's positioned angle and length are optimized for the close quarter slashing and tearing they will most often encounter, and a Terminator wielding these claws can quickly render even the mightiest of adversaries into a bloody, quivering ruin. Imagine, if you will, the sight of a Terminator advancing through a storm of fire, claws alight with deadly energy. In closer quarters, the sound of the Claw's energy field alone crackling and echoing through corridors. The Lightning Claws are very much as psychological as they are physical weapon, for to wield Lightning Claws is to become a physical embodiment of what it means to be a Space Marine. That is to say, an irresistible force, unyielding, and that if given the opportunity, will cut down anyone who stands in their way with ruthless efficiency. I think I consider Lightning Claws a candidate, though, for insane weaponry, because there is nothing subtle in any way about what they are. They're just two gigantic claws designed to rip apart the enemies of the Emperor. They're instruments of pure, visceral destruction, meant for warriors who embrace the Astartes' art of close-quarter combat supremacy. Then, it's very easy to forget that they're also a masterwork of defense as well. Closing the claws together creates a powerful shield, able to block an enemy attack in all but the most extreme combat scenarios, not to mention just the armor they're wearing as well. Because the Astartes encased in layers of near impenetrable armor, wielding these devastating melee weapons that can quite literally shred through their enemies. A Terminator with lightning claws is a walking engine of slaughter, and I think one could very much argue stands as one of the strongest representations of the Emperor's vision for humanity's ultimate defenders. That is to say, very specialized and absolutely terrifying. Because at their core, Lightning Claws represent this strange juxtaposition that we see in the Space Marines, something that I've often seen commented upon of late with the secret level animation, which I may try and look at soon. It is this sense that they deploy extraordinary brutality, yet delivered with a remarkable, almost poetic, precision and discipline. Although there are the more comedic sides of 40k that would see Lightning Claws as just this horrifying war gear of madness, the more grounded view would understand that they form part of the Astartes' balance between close quarters and ranged combat. In this instance, the weaponry leans entirely to the close quarter side, meaning that to witness a Terminator wielding lightning claws in combat is to see the Astartes' philosophy made manifest. Their purest form of combat, absolute, unbreakable strength, a ballet of blade and physical movement, channeled through pure, unstoppable violence. The Lightning Claws are one of the most extreme reminders that the Astartes are not merely warriors. They are themselves living weapons of war. They could fight with no weapon at all and be just as deadly, yet when equipped with something as horrific as Lightning Claws, then every strike, slash, and enemy will be reduced to ruins. They are entirely representative of the Space Marines' singular purpose, to destroy the enemies of mankind without hesitation, mercy, or questioning, to be efficient in the art of death. For in the grim darkness of the far future, where war is unending, so must be the unbreakable will of the servants of the Emperor, and their weapon of choice must be equally unbreakable. It is too easy to think of the Astartes as being mere bolter-wielding superhuman warriors in powered armor. But they are the masters of war. They train endlessly in every possible combat discipline, every piece of war gear, every tactical combination and approach. And when you scale up their weaponry and armor to that of a Terminator wielding twin lightning claws, teleporting into close quarters against the most horrendous enemies of humanity, through to just the uncountable masses of heretics. In either instance, what follows could surely be best described as a combat situation of truly insane brutality.